Dan Coynor, and you're listening to the B2 Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm Chris Lappin and I'm joined by Peter Prickett.
Hi guys.
We're delighted to be joined on the line by Mark Tinkler. How are you doing this evening, Mark?
Yeah, very good, thanks Chris. Really good.
I wanted to take you back to 1993, which seemed to be a great year for you. So, you were part of the England team that won the under-18s Euro Championship?
Yeah, that's right, it was a great year for me, personally, but also for the lads that we played. Obviously, we won the FA Youth Cup that year. Then the lads, I think it was five of us, went out to play for England in the summer and won the European Championships with England in the 18s. But also that year, I think there was three or four of us made our debuts in the first team at Leeds. So it was a fantastic year for me and for some of the other boys as well in the team.
So what were your memories of the championships, the Euros?
Just the crowds, really. I think everybody was. The stadiums were quite full, and obviously we didn't expect it. Obviously it was in England, and it was a European Championship, but we didn't expect them to be as full as they were. But everybody seemed to get behind the team around the Nottingham area. We had games at Walsall, which the fans turned out in force to support the lads. We had a really good team with good players, but also good lads who would work hard for each other and try their best to help each other out. Really, obviously there was five of us from Leeds, and there was five United lads, I think there was. So it was a great time, and some really good players and great lads as well, really.
So as being one of five Leeds players, it must have been amazing to celebrate it with your mates.
Yeah, it was great afterwards. Obviously, we weren't allowed to drink afterwards. We were back on. We went for a meal after the actual final against Turkey. Then
yeah,
had a meal with all the players and the staff, and we had to get back to Leeds. Really, we were training the next day. We had to get a taxi back to our digs in Leeds and get back on the training field. I think it was the day after. It might have been 2 days after the. After the final, actually, we had a day after the following day, but we trained the next day, so it was straight back into it, really. But it was a great time. I think as a young player playing for your country, and no matter what age, and you win a major championship, it's fantastic, and it lives with you forever. It was a fantastic time, and like I said before, that you couldn't wish for a better group of players, really. And, really good people and top players as well.
I was looking at it was a really good squad. Yeah, some of them went on to have some legendary careers. Was it Gary Neville, Sol Campbell, Paul Scholes, Robbie Fowler?
There was a few top players in the team who went on to have fantastic careers and fully deserved, really. Played in World Cups. Nicky Butt, who was a fantastic player. Like you said, Scholes, Big Sol, Gary, Robbie, they went on to have fantastic careers and playing World Cups and European Championships at first team level, which was a great achievement from all five of them, really. So, but they were good lads. There was no egos amongst them coming from Liverpool or coming from Man United or Spurs, where Sol was. There was no egos, just good lads who wanted to do well for each other, wanted to do well for the team. And it showed, because I would be working on the training ground as well, and he went on to a fantastic career in the Premier League and for the national team, really.
Yeah, so you also won the, as you mentioned, the FA Youth Cup against your biggest rivals, Man United. Both leagues were played in front of 30,000 plus fans. Must have been an amazing week in your young career.
Yeah, it was. We were obviously at the time, Leeds had never won the FA Youth Cup before. Obviously, we had Paul Hart as a manager. It was a fantastic manager, and somebody we all looked up to at the time. I've said it many times before, I think you look at Man United and they probably had a bit more quality in the team as an overall team, but I think we had a lot of players who with a lot of commitment, a lot of desire, no selfishness amongst the lads. They would do anything for each other. And I think we did have some quality in the team. We had some good players as well, which helped us secure the win in the final. But I think the main thing was that the lads at the time would just do anything for each other. We had a great group of boys, really. It was a fantastic fantastic team ethic, really, that we had.
Does it feel, retrospectively, a bigger achievement when you see what the careers of the United side went on to? Because they had the Nevilles and Scholes and Beckham in their side.
I think at the time we had good players as well. Like you see, we had five who went into the England team as well. Obviously, the lads got the chance at United and they took it. I think we were the boys at Leeds, we in and out of the team. We never really got a good run in the team. Even though Howard gave us our debuts when we were 18, we never really stamped our authority on the team. When the big, obviously, we had a fantastic midfielder at Leeds at the time. We had Gary Mack, Speedo, Bats, Strack, then we had Steve Yours, David Lowcastle, Scotty Sellers. So it was difficult to get in the team and stay in there, because if you did well, and the first team players come back from suspension or injury, they were back in the team, really. So
yeah,
it was difficult. But yeah, in thinking of the lads who went on to United and you see Alex Ferguson give them their chance, and they grasped it with both hands, really, and they went from centre to centre as a team, and obviously five or six of them played together for a lot of years at United. So that's a fantastic achievement from them players, really.
It must have been amazing being a midfielder at Leeds at the time, with the likes of Gary McAllister, Gary Speed, David Batty, Gordon Strachan to game experience from.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, we obviously at the time we were in and out of the team, different players. So some of them come down there. But I think it was mainly Gordon who played for the reserves quite a bit at the time. And he was great with the lads, always encouraging them and helping them through games and talking them through games. But you could go and speak to Bats and Speedo and Gary Mack, they were the same. They'd talk to you and they'd help you through games if you were in the first team. Always encouraging the younger players, obviously because Speedo and Bats come through the ranks at Leeds as well. So it was great to have them amongst us, really. And they were really good lads as well. Like I said before, there was no egos amongst them players. They're really good people, and I think if you're a good person, it goes a long way, I think, in football. I think you don't get as much these days, I don't think. But I think it doesn't help the players in your team. If you're a good person, you want to do well for each other. So, and then they won the league, and which was a fantastic team from all the players in that team as well. So, yeah, it was great to have the likes of them players in the team and around the stadium and the training ground. It was fantastic, yeah, for young boys.
So when the Premier League started in 1992, from a playing perspective, did it feel different?
I think there was a lot more publicity around it, and obviously it was televised a lot more. Obviously, I played a couple of games in the first team that was live on Sky.
Yeah.
I think as the years went by, it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and to where it is now, it's absolutely huge all over the world. So I think as the years went on, it kept raising the bar really every year, and it was getting bigger and bigger. And to where it is now, it's unbelievable. Really. It's all the money that's in the game, and the amount of publicity the Premier League gets, and all the games on Sky and sold all over the world. And it's great for young players, I think. To see all these games. When I was a young boy, I wish I could watch all these games they watch on the television, because it would have been fantastic.
So you moved to York City. What prompted the move?
I didn't really get... Me and George Graham didn't really see eye to eye at the time. We had a few disagreements in training.
We interviewed Andy Cousins. I think I got that impression from him as well. Him and George Graham didn't get on. So.
Yeah, George has his own way, and he has his own way of playing, his own players you want in the team, and sometimes at a club, if a new manager comes in, your face doesn't fit, and that was it, really. But like I say, if your face doesn't fit and the manager doesn't want you, you just accept that and you move on, and that's what happened. York City made a bid for us, and Leeds accepted it, and I went there, which was it's a bit of a surprise. I had another year and a half on my contract. I didn't really want to leave Leeds, because I've been there since I moved down to Leeds when I was 16 from my home at the North East. I love the place, love the city, fantastic people. But yeah, they come in and I moved to York, which was a step there, and a step to play first team football on a regular basis, really, which I think is what I needed at the time, because I was in and out of the squads, I wasn't playing in the first team, so I needed to play football, really.
So how did you find a step down from Premier League level to Football League level?
I know people say it's a lot quicker in League One, League Two, but I didn't find it too much quicker. I think obviously it's a bit more physical. The tackles fly in, some tackles the ref overlooks at times. But I settled pretty well. Actually, I just got on with my game, and as the season went on, I think I got better and better, and I improved each year in the league, really. So which was good. Obviously, I'm quite a physical player when I played anyhow, so it didn't really affect me really physicality of the League One or League Two. So yeah, I enjoyed that part of it, and it didn't surprise what the tempo or the pace of the game was going to be like, really, to be honest with you.
Right, so I'm going to pass you over to Peter, who's got some questions about your coaching career.
Oh, okay, man.
Hi, Mark. Very interesting listening to you talk about your playing career. I was actually wondering, while you were playing, at what stage did you seriously start to consider becoming a coach?
To be honest with you, I never really considered until I was up at... I went to Livingston for a year when I was 33, and Mark Proctor was the manager there. Was also at Middlesbrough as a player and a coach, and I know Dave Parnaby, who's the academy manager at Middlesbrough. He's been there nearly 20 years now, and Dave used to be my school teacher at school. So I got in touch with Dave, and he said, "Why don't you start doing your badges?" And so I started doing my badges, really. And when I finished up at Livingston, I had to retire from the professional game for costing me Achilles and stuff. So I come back down home and I went to see Dave, and I got my B licence, and I went into the club as under 14 coach. So that's how it all really started, really.
Okay. What's your current position at the academy?
It's professional development phase coach. So I work with mainly the under 18s, but it's classed as 17 to 21 development phase coach. But I work with the 18s on a daily basis, really.
And Borough, fortunately, one of the academies that have historically had a really good record bringing players through. I mean, if you look back, there's always been academy players over the last 15, 20 years. Is that a deliberate policy from the club?
Yeah, I've been there 9 years now. I worked 4 years in the academy as a part-time coach, but when all... EPP come in with categorising academies, I managed to get myself a full-time job at the club. So I've been there for the last 5 years. And yeah, obviously knowing Dave and knowing the club and how the academy works, it's always been the philosophy to try and get our local players through into the first team. And like you said, we've done it really well over the last 15, 20 years. We've had all our teams that we've had since I've been at the club, we've been from the northeast of England. And it's different when we go and play like say Man City, Chelsea, Man United at times. They have players from all over the world, really, all over Europe. They fetch you over to play in their academy teams and in their youth teams. So we try and work on the basis of getting recruiting our players from the North East, hopefully from the Middlesbrough area or surrounding areas or the North East. Obviously, we've got some in Newcastle as well who want players as well. So. But no, that's how we want to produce local players for our team and wherever we can, really. And like you said before, we've done that very well over the last 10, 15 years.
So you obviously believe, or the club obviously believe, that there's enough talent locally to not have to go fishing in other ponds?
Yeah, I think we do. I think obviously the chairman, Steve Gibson, he's a brother boy, and he loves the club, and he loves the area, and I don't think there's any greater pleasure for the chairman seeing an homegrown player walk out on the pitch at the Riverside, really. So it's difficult doing that as well, but it's not easy. Obviously now with all the money in the Premier League now, and with your Premier League club, there's money there to go and buy players, but it is difficult. I think it's difficult for all clubs with the money in the Premier League. But we keep doing our best, and we've got some excellent coaches at the club from foundation phase all the way through to the under-21s who work very hard with the players on a daily basis to try and not just make them better footballers, but as I said before, to become better young people, which I think in the long term, that's what we aim to be, or that's what we aim for them to be. Just better young people, which will hopefully, if they don't make it in the professional game, they go out, would be a good person, really. And like I said, we've done that really well over the last 10 or 15 years, so we keep trying to do our best to produce players from our area, really.
In the academy structure, is there a particular development focus? I mean, some academies focus on 1v1 domination. There are others who put a great emphasis on possession. Is there a particular balance that it's tipped towards at Borough?
We have our own philosophy. We know we like to play out. We like to play from the back. We like to play through the thirds. Especially at a younger age, we try and get them to do that. Obviously, when they move into the 18s and the 21s, we still want them to do that, but they could be going to the first team environment the following week. The young player might get picked out and go to the first team environment, so he's got to make good decisions at the right time when he's on the ball. So if he's under pressure, he's got to put him behind the full backs over the top of the centre half set. He's got to do that. So we're trying to learn them to make good decisions when they're on the ball. But if we can play and we want to play through, we'll play through. Like I say, we work on a cycle at the club. We work on, for 1 week, it's cross, it's passing, receiving, offensive support, then defending, final third player, game understanding, and so on, really. So we try and give the lads a variety of aspects of the game that they can learn and get better on, really.
How do the methods and styles used at the academy now compare to your days as an academy player?
Well, when I was at Leeds, I did the laundry, I did the corridors, I did boots. If it wasn't done right, I was there till 6 o'clock before I got sent home to walk up to my digs at Beeston, which might have been dark, which was a mile and a half away. These days, you get a couple of jobs to do, but it's not as demanding as in our day. You get a lot done for them. They get an awful lot done for them, which I think happens in most academies, which I think they still got to learn to do things for themselves. I think we do too much for them, but I think that's part and parcel of the game now is the way it's gone. But we're trying to give them responsibility in certain ways. Because they've got to have responsibility. If you don't have responsibility, for me, they're going to get nowhere. You've got to put the onus on the player at times and let them make mistakes. Let them learn from mistakes and move on from it, really. But it's certainly when I played, it was certainly a grounding experience. But like I say, they don't do half as much as we used to do. So it's a change. It's a different environment now. Because obviously we're category one, so we have. I've day release now, so some of the lads from under 11s to under 16s come into the club on day release once or twice a week, so they get time into the club and they get taught lessons in the club as well. So it's a totally different environment from when I was a youth team player.
What about session structures and session focuses? Is that significantly different to when you were coming through, or is it really the same sort of stuff still being taught to the players?
I think it's the same sort of stuff, but we're taught in a different way. Like I said before, we have a cycle of topics we work through for 6 weeks. I think that the foundation phase working off for 12 weeks. I say like pass receiving offensive boards for 2 weeks in the foundation phase in the youth development phase. Then obviously it's playing through, final third, game understanding and defending. For 5 weeks, then we have a review week at the end of them 5 weeks. It's relatively that you work on it, but it's all structured now. I think in our day you went out and you worked on, say you did a possession book, but it wasn't based around anything. It was just about keeping the ball and kind of winning the ball back quickly once you lose the ball. And you kind of learned as you went along, really. But I think a lot these days there's a lot. I don't know whether some coaches kind of do work on their own way. Some coaches stop the session and go in and coach. Some people wait to the end of 5 minutes and then go in and give the lads a break and talk through the session. A lot of coaches do differently now, but I was lucky at least. I had Dick Bate. It was before Paul Hardcome. I had Dick Bate. It was a fantastic coach, way beyond his years when he was at Leeds. We had video analysis on a Monday morning. We used to get our games recorded on a Saturday up at Fulham Park. Dick used to have us watching them on a Monday, and obviously Dick went on to have a fantastic career in coaching, obviously working with the FA and working all over the country and all over the world, really. So I was lucky in a way. I got taught by a very good coach, and which all coaches are different. All people are different, so people coach in different ways. I don't know whether people's trying to make everybody be robots now and do it the same way, but you've got to be you've got to be an individual when you coach. You've got to coach the way you coach. You can't have somebody come and tell you how to coach, because you'll end up like a robot and people doing the same things day in and out, and you can't have that. You've got to let players have a freedom to go and express themselves, and if you've got to tap into players every now and then and help them along and do that, but you've got to let players express themselves and make decisions and make mistakes for themselves and hopefully learn from that better than a coach going in every 30 seconds and telling them what to do, really.
Yeah, I firmly believe that the more you coach or the longer you coach, the more of you actually comes through, and there's no hiding who you are.
No, exactly. I think as a young player getting coached, the worst thing you need is the session getting stopped every 2 minutes to somebody to come in and tell you this and tell you that. You just want to play. You want to go out there. You make mistakes, but maybe it's after the session or during the session, you have a water break, you have a discussion with the lads and try and help them along with a question answer thing, or let them do it themselves. Or but you've got to let them make mistakes and learn from mistakes and just give them minds themselves. They can go out there and do what they want for a while and let them play instead of just dictating how they should play and what they should do all the time. As the level goes up, the age goes up, then you've got to be a bit more structured and obviously a bit more. You've got to be a bit more demanding of the players, because they might be in the first team when they come into the youth team or 21s. They might go in the first team, and our manager works a certain way. He wants the players to play a certain way and in a system, so you've got to be prepared for that. So as they're working up the ages, you've got to prepare them for coming into the building full time and the demands of that, really. But I think as a young player, you should just be there and guided a bit in the sessions and helped along, but let them play and let them enjoy it, because I think that's what I enjoy, just playing football and learning from mistakes, and hopefully I won't do it again. If the player keeps making the same mistakes, then that might be his level. He might not be able to move on from that. That might be his level in football. But the better players, the great players, make more right decisions than they make wrong decisions. So I think that's the way I would do it.
You just mentioned a minute ago Dick Bate and the FA. Recently, they released the England DNA document. Has that had any influence in the way that Middlesbrough are working with young players? Has it had any effect at all?
Yeah, we obviously a lot of our, we go on coaching courses with the FA. We learn a great deal from the FA courses. Some we take back to our club, and some stuff we already do there. So obviously, Dave Parnaby is a well-renowned, a well-respected academy manager throughout the country and throughout Europe. So Dave's always open to new ideas and new ways of working. We always listen to whatever everybody's got to say. But I think we try to do it our way, out the Middlesbrough way, what we have done for the last 10 or 15 years. And we don't want to take that away from what we do, but if something comes along and we listen and we learn and we take it into our sessions and it helps our players, then great, that's fantastic. We always open up the club for new ideas. If it's going to get the best out of our players, of course we are. We're not going to shut the door or anything like that. We want our players to become better players and better people. That's what it's about, and producing players not just for our football club, but for the game in general, which we have done over the last 10 or 15 years.
Futsal has squeezed its way into the England DNA, and I have a particular interest in futsal. And for me, it actually kind of started with Middlesbrough and Janino's time at the club. Is futsal used within the academy at all?
Yeah, I've just done my level 2 futsal course. We just finished that, so we had I think it was 12 of us did it from the foundation phase all the way up to the professional development phase. So we've started doing our futsal courses now. So I think it was 12 of us got level 1 and level 2. So the foundation phase, obviously just youth development phase, they implement futsal into their sessions, and we haven't got the proper surface at the club at the moment, but we try and implement certain ways of futsal work, and the tempo of it at times, and the quick play, and obviously futsal's got individual 1v1s to try and score goals, and quick passing and quick movement, so we try and incorporate all that into the game. But yeah, we've took futsal, we had Ian Bateman who come and took our course at the club. Ian's obviously works for the FA, and he's an excellent coach. So yeah, we took it on board at Middlesbrough. If it's, like I said before, if it's going to help our players, we definitely do stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay, great. I have one final question for you, and it's to do with the ugly side of academy work and releasing players. I don't know how involved you are in that side of things, or if someone else does that. But the media love a story about players being released for being too small and then going on to achieve great things. And they make it seem like it happens a lot. How often does that sort of thing actually really genuinely happen?
Release a player for being small?
Yeah, too small, not strong enough, that sort of thing.
At our club, it rarely happens. If it ever happens, I don't think it's for releasing a player for being too small at a young age. We've got a lot of little players who are technically excellent. They were only little tots, and it's like under 9s and 10s all the way through. And at under 16s, even under 18s, we've got two small players who were really tiny, who were physically not developed yet, but. But they technically, they've got a chance, so we don't look at them just because they're small and they're playing against physical players every week and they're going to get bashed about. But we take that into consideration when we play the players. We don't want to play a player who's playing against 6 foot and he's 4 foot and he's going to get kicked all over the place. We might play him down a year just to get him used to the physical side of it. Then as the season goes on, the coaches might put him back up just to put him in and out and trying to get used to the physical side of it. And I think if he's especially in the foundation phase or youth development phase, if he's playing at his age and his physical body's not adapted well to get playing against big lads, and he's not on the ball enough, and he's just going through the game, he's had many touches, I think then we've got to look at playing him down. So if he's a technical gifted player, he's got to see the ball, he's got to have the ball. And if he's playing up at his same age and he's not having any of the ball, he's not going to develop for me. So we look at playing players down. Say if he's under 14, we might play him down under 13, just to get him on the ball and get playing football and get his confidence up and learn to deal with tackles and the physical side of the game. But as, I think as the months go on, the season goes on, yeah, we put him up with us. I don't think there's any cases where we released a boy who's been too small. I've had a lot of players over the years who's gone on to have good careers who were really small in the foundation phase and youth development phase, but had a really good growth spurt at youth level. So I think people say that now. I don't agree with it. I think that's probably a myth. Maybe it happened a few years ago, but no more. I don't think coaches are naive now to release little just players just because the physical side is not what it should be at that time. I don't think that happens for me anymore. I can't speak for other clubs, but definitely not our club, I don't think.
Okay, brilliant, thank you. That's sort of what I was getting at, because people say it and talk about it, but does it really happen now? Is it a myth? And you've answered that, really.
I think it is a myth.
Right, well, that's all my questions done. So, thank you very much from me, Mark.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks very much.
Yeah, I've got one more question. I read you're a Sunderland fan.
Yeah, I am.
Yes, what do you think of Sam Allardyce getting linked with the England job today?
Yeah, it's great for Sam because he's done a fantastic job at Sunderland. I try and get the games on when I can, only take my little boy to Sunderland. But obviously we've got youth games on a Saturday, so I don't get as many as I'd like. Or go to watch Middlesbrough as well. He's done fantastic for the club. He seems a fantastic motivator. He gets the best out of individuals, and he brings them all together as a team. And I went to watch a couple of games last season, especially near the end of the season against Chelsea, where they were winning 1-0 and they were 2-1 down half time. And you thought, because we needed to win that game. And he thought, oh, this could be it. They could be 4-5. But they come out second half, and because they played really, really well first half. They were lucky to go in 2-1 down, and they come out second half, and they were on fire again, and they won the game 3-2, I think it was, and they were fantastic. So
yeah,
that says love for the manager to get that sort of attitude and commitment out of his players when you're going a goal down when you should have been a goal up, really. And that's full credit to Big Sam, because he's done a great job. But for me, why not give Big Sam a go? He's a fantastic motivator. He gets the best out of players, and fair, we've got a fantastic group of England players who maybe one or two of them need to kick up the backside to be told some home tools. I think that's what one or two of them need. Not all of them, but I think one or two of them who play in the Euros maybe still. I think so. For me, yeah, why not? I'm sad to lose him with Sunderland, don't get us done, but I think he could be a good choice for the FA. So I would back him if he got the job.
Right, so before we finish, do you want to plug your social media, your Twitter?
No, I'm fine. I just go on every now and then. I'm not really a social media freak, so
all right.
I'm fine.
All right, so I've really enjoyed speaking to you today. I'd love to have you on again in the future.
Okay, thanks very much, Chris. Cheers.
Okay, thank you.
Cheers, that's it.